My name is Rudy Edmund, and this program deals with a portion of the history of the Holden Mine, and largely the slides that I will show were taken by people who lived here during the time the mine was in operation, and recorded some of the early history that relates to that. A series of the slides are taken inside of Copper Mountain, and others are taken in the village here during the time the mine was in operation, from 1937 until 1957, when the mine closed. I'll show you some of the things that relate to the mine by way of these slides, which have been provided by people who worked here and lived here. The slide showing Lake Chelan that's on the screen before you at the present time played a very significant role in the history of the mine, in that it provided a transportation link between the highways and the railroads and the mine proper, which was located deep in the Cascade Mountains. And had it not been for this water connection of Lake Chelan, it would have been very difficult to have ever opened up the ore body which became the Holden Mine. The mine produced mainly copper and gold with a little silver and zinc, but it was a very successful mine, and the material that was produced had to be concentrated here at Holden and taken out by way of Lake Chelan to the railroad at the end of Lake Chelan, and then to the Tacoma smelter, where the ore concentrate was converted into metal of mainly copper and gold. This shows the Lake Chelan, and now we'll proceed to the mine area. One of the difficulties that was a part of this operation was the fact that the mine ran the year round, but this is a very heavy area of snowfall, and the snowfall in a winter here often exceeds 300 inches. And many winters there was as much as 500 inches of snow. This is the upper level of the mine, known as the 1,500-foot level, and it's the level at which the tunnel went into the mountain. But here you see the buildings that are at that level. And this one on the left is the engineering building, and the one farthest down in the picture was the change house. This is the place where the miners came to put on their working clothes and then go into the mountain and produce the ore from the ore body. A further picture here shows the amount of snow and the problem that was related to removing this during the winter time in order to keep the mine going, because the mill and the mine operated on a 24-hour-a-day basis every day of the week, and in order to keep the operation going, the road had to be kept open and the area cleaned of snow. You can see here, looking down the valley and across the area, where the ore came out of the mountain and then entered the mill just below this particular building. This is the way the tunnel appeared during the time the mine was in operation, and this is a typical winter scene. Keep in mind that all of the ore had to come out on these tracks that you see before you here. And the tunnel goes back into the mountain now a half a mile from this point, so that all of the tailings that are spread through the valley and the ore that came out all had to come out on these particular tracks. Now, this is the people train, the train that took the miners back into the ore body, and the operator here would load into the cars behind him the people who were going into the mine to work an 8-hour shift, and then come back out to this point and go home to their respective places in the village. The ticket for getting on to this train was actually the headlight, which you see here, the man is holding in his hand, and you had to get this light from the change house and take it off of a board so that every light had a number and it had a particular peg. And when you came to get onto the train and go into the mountain, you had to have that light on you, and it then could be put onto your hard hat, and you went in to work your shift. Now, when you came out, you placed the lamp back on the board at the change house, and in that way, the company kept a very rigorous record of who was in the mine at all times, and they knew that when all the lights were back on the board, it would be safe to detonate dynamite within the mountain, and that was a safety precaution that was always observed, and there were never any accidents that related to that system. So it was a very important one. Now, we're now entering the tunnel, and what you will see now in a series of pictures, which were taken by a company engineer near the time that the mine closed down, but this gives you an idea of the kind of machinery and the tunnel itself going back into the mountain. Here's a further view of the tunnel and the machinery, and we'll show a series of slides here. Now, one of the things that shows here is the overhead cable that provided the electricity that ran this particular motorized car, which you see would haul in tools and equipment and also haul ore out of the mountain from the ore body. You see certain pipes that carry air and electricity and kept the mine with fresh air and so on, so that having the mine back a half a mile in the mountain, it was necessary to provide both energy and of course a good working environment for the miners as they work with the ore body. Here again you see the motorized electrically driven car, and all of the electricity for the mine had to come in by high line from the Chelan area and up to this area, and then very high voltage cables ran through the tunnel here back to the big machinery back in the mine hoist room proper. We're now at the end of the tunnel, a half a mile back into Copper Mountain, and what you see before you here is a large hoist, really an elevator that ran from the upper levels down to the lower levels. Now, and while the mine was in operation, that hoist would run from the upper level, which was about the 300-foot level, to this level, which would be the 1,500 foot, and then on down 1,000 feet below this level, so that that hoist could bring both equipment and ore in connection with the moving of materials vertically, because the ore body stood at a very steep angle, and therefore this hoist was needed to travel from one mining level to the other. This is a good view of the hoist room itself. And you see the large machines here on the right, which are all electrically operated. Also notice the roof. And this is a very large room, approximately the size of a football field, and contains, of course, all of these large hoists and machines, crushers, and so on, that were a part of the operation back in the mountain. This is the hoist operator. He's the man that sits with a series of panels in front of him and runs the elevator, the hoist, up and down from one level to the other, loading on different kinds of equipment and material. And here you see again, within the hoist room, the large machinery and the large hoist here that operated the mine, and the people were rode these elevators, and also the ore was brought up and down from these levels. This is a cutaway of the mine. And if you look at the right-hand side of the picture, you can see an area where tunnels lead into that. At the right is the ore body, and it ran vertically for 2,500 feet, almost a half a mile. And the hoist room is the room right at the end of the tunnel that leads furthest to the left. And beyond that, you can see the outline of the mill, and the ore was brought out then from the various tunnels, lifted to the 1,500-foot level, and then brought out to the top of the mill, which you see here in this cutaway diagram. Then it was processed through the mill, and the tailings were distributed in the valley, and the concentrate then went into the truck that you see at the lower left-hand part of the picture, and that carried the concentrate down to Lake Chelan and then beyond to the Tacoma smelter. This is one of the tunnels being developed into the mountain in order to get at the ore body. And you can see here a junction. There's rail in the foreground, and then there's another tunnel that branches off to the right. Here is a view of some of the machinery inside and some of the tunnel itself. This is the development of a new tunnel, which does not have track on it at present. But when you think of tunnels like this and you look at Copper Mountain, you have to realize that there is as much as over 50 miles of tunnel of this kind inside of Copper Mountain, and all of it developed in very hard rock, and they did not have to shear it up with wooden scaffolding or anything of the kind. The rock was so hard that they simply blasted it out, and the tunnel stayed open, and to this day they still would be in good shape back in the mountain. Here you see another portion of the tunnel, and with track on it and an ore car, and here material is being moved along one of the tunnels, and finally would come to the haulage tunnel, which would bring material out to the top of the mill. And one of the important kinds of things that had to go on was the drilling of poles so that dynamite could be set, and then the rock blasted off, because the rock was very hard, and the only way they had of removing rock and building tunnels was to use these percussion drills to make holes in the rock and then set dynamite and then detonate the dynamite. On the left-hand side, you can see some of the drill bits and the machine itself by the two men. Here is another view of this drilling operation, and again, directing the bit into the rock and drilling holes, and this process went on, and that's the way the more than 50 miles of tunnels were developed, and the way the ore was finally blasted loose and brought out to the mill for processing. Here, a final picture then of this operation. Now, you can imagine the amount of noise that went on inside of the mountain when this kind of operation was underway. Here now we are at the edge of the ore body. Now the rock that's immediately in the foreground is waste rock where the tunnel is being developed, and directly in front of the man now is the ore body itself. Now that was what they were operating the mine for, was to get at this particular ore body. And so you can see the drill bits to the right of the man, the ore body directly ahead, and this picture shows now the face of the ore. And this is where holes were also drilled, and dynamite then to blast off the ore, and then finally process it down through crushers and bringing it to the mill for concentration. Now here you're looking into one of the so-called stopes, or large rooms, and you see two men here working with the ore and the ore body, and these were very large rooms that were developed back into the mountain. This is stope number 257, which is above the 1500 foot level, so as you would go into the mountain in the tunnel, this is one of the big rooms that was developed in order to get the ore out. In some cases, from the ceiling to the floor in these particular stopes, there was as much as 900 feet shown from the bottom of the stope to the top. And in width across these rooms, in some cases, as much as 80 feet across. So 900 feet high, 80 feet across, were kinds of stopes and open areas that existed in Copper Mountain as the ore was being removed. Here you're looking into one of these stopes, and you can't get any idea of the size of this because there is nothing here to give you perspective, but this is one of the very large stopes at the 1500 foot level of the mine. Now we'll see a few slides here of machinery that was used in this kind of processing. Here is one illustration of that. Here is a case where the miners are working with the ore at the ore body here and concentrating the material into cars and so on. In this case, the car has been brought to a place where there's a chute, and the ore was dumped into that chute. And the ore was allowed to fall as far as possible, and it was part of the operating design, and that helped break up the ore. so that the more they could break the ore up by blasting it loose and by letting it fall and crushing against other ore, that helped the milling process and finally getting it down to the size that it could be concentrated. This is the lunchroom back in the hoist room area at the end of the tunnel, a half a mile back in the mountain, and you can appreciate that these miners were happy to have a place like this where they could get away from the noise back in the mountain, have their lunch, and then go back and finish out their shift, you see, for an 8-hour shift, which was normal, and then come back out of the mountain and by way of the haulage tunnel. Notice in this room, this slide shows the date that these pictures were taken. Notice that this is May 16, 1957, and actually the mine closed in June of 1957. So these pictures were taken just a very short time before the closing of the mine and the mine operation. Now here is a ventilation tunnel. This does not have track in it, but it's an opening that allows fresh air to come in. And one of the things they had that they operated constantly was a very large fan that forced air back into the mountain, and through tunnels like this, they kept the mine in fresh air, and the miners had a good area to work in. Here is a further development of an air tunnel, and no ore came out of here, but it was essential to have this kind of ventilation within the mine proper. This is a view of the outer end of the tunnel now. And in the summertime, and the entrance at the 1,500-foot level, and this is the level that goes back to the ore body, then, that we have just seen. Now, in the wintertime, you can appreciate the problem that would relate to a very heavy snowfall. This shows the mill in the wintertime. And the building at the right of the mill, the lower building, would be actually the area where you are at the present time, which was the assay house. And the assay house is to the right here. The mill is to the left, and you can see at the upper level of the mine, the upper level of the mill, that's where the ore came in, and it was processed through the mill then, and this operation went on winter and summer, and the snow, of course, had to be removed in order to keep the roof from caving in of the mill area, and they were very careful in monitoring that so that they didn't get it overloaded and crush the roofs. This is the same mill in the summertime. And you can see that it's a very large building, and the assay house would be over on the right, and the tailings then came out of the mill and would be spread by means of these pipes. And you'll notice these wooden pipes around the museum here and other places around Holden area here. And they were wooden pipes wrapped with wire, and this was the most effective way of carrying away the ground-up ore, the tailings from the ore body. This is all waste material, and it had to be spread out in the valley down below the mill, and it was carried by water through these pipes out onto the tailing pile proper. Now, as you look at this, you can see where the gentlemen are standing is a trestle. Now, the wooden pipe carrying these tailings would be located on that when the process was in operation. And these tailings were carried out, and actually they were built up, and then you can see there's a berm, and you know, they piled them up so that they could carry it out with water, and they recycled the water and brought the material then back and recirculated the water so as to not contaminate the valley. In the background you see Bonanza Mountain now, and to the right would be Martin Ridge, and these tailings covered, the mill tailings covered about 80 acres of the valley floor, and they have this typical rust color. Now, the assay house looked like this when I first saw it in 1962. The roof had caved in. There were still samples on the shelves, and you can see that this is the actual place where the present museum is today. And when we got ready to build the museum, you notice the foundation here and the floor, and what we did was simply clean up this area and then built the museum right on the exact foundation and floor of the original assay house. The wrecked mill, or the remnants of the mill, are straight ahead of this and to the right. And you can see then where that was located. Now, this particular family worked, the man, the senior, worked as an employer of the Howe Sound Mining Company. And his particular job was to run a big truck that brought the ore concentrate from the mill area down to Lake Chelan, where it was loaded onto a barge. And I asked him if he had pictures that he could let me have that would show something of the problem they had during particularly the winter time in keeping the trucks going. And he provided me this series of slides. Here is his truck, and it's a little dark, but you can see the outline of the truck in the snow, and he had three ore pails, each carrying 5 tons of concentrate on the back of that truck, and he had to see that that got down to the end of the road. Now, in the wintertime, they had to keep the roads open 24 hours a day because they could not allow the concentrate to pile up at the mill, and otherwise the mine would have to be closed down. So they operated this kind of snow removal equipment and kept the roads open so that the trucks could go back and forth. This was a little patrol vehicle that went ahead to make sure that the trucks could get through and that there were no avalanche slides or anything that would block the way for the trucks. And when they got to the end of the road, then the trucks would move out onto this pier where the ore would be removed from the truck, ore concentrate, and set onto a barge. At this point, this was the Holden Mine dock, and you're looking at Lake Chelan. Now you're down at the lake level, and you can see the big hoist here that was capable of picking up these 5-ton buckets. And this picture shows each one of these pails would be lifted onto this barge, and each pail carries 5 tons of ore concentrate that would be headed down Lake Chelan and then finally transferred to the railroad, and then it had to go all the way to Tacoma. Just kind of add up in your own mind, 5 tons for each one of those buckets and realize the weight of this particular barge load that was moving down the lake. And this kind of operation went on day and night all winter long for 20 years during the operation of the mine. Now I want to switch to show you Mr. and Mrs. Barquist. Mr. Barquist was brought in 1928 to make a study for the Howe Sound Mining Company to determine whether it was feasible to open up a mine at this particular area. At that point in time, in 1928, Mr. and Mrs. Barquist had just been married, so they were a honeymoon couple, and they came into the valley, and he actually worked for 4 summers, and she was in the valley with him. They were the original honeymoon couple that were Honeymoon Heights, you see, gets its name, and they lived at Honeymoon Heights and were the original couple to live there. Then after the mine opened in 1937 and 1938, this family came in, and this man was in charge of the operation of the mine for the 10 years from 1938 to 1948. And this is John Bly and his wife Ruth. And they lived at the village here. He was the head man to operate the mine and the mill for 10 years. And he lived in one of the chalets that you see in the background. And right back of where, back of them here, on Chalet Circle. And one of the supervisory people lived in those homes. And they look very similar to what they do today. Now, this is the view of Chalet Circle during the time the mine was in operation. Note there's quite a contrast here from today. Today you see a lot of trees which have been planted, you see, since the mine closed down, and now are quite large. But in the early days, it was much more barren. This is Main Street during the early days of the mine, and while the mine was in operation prior to 1957. Now, what you do not see in the valley today is the miners' village, which was known as Winston Camp. Now, there are roughly 100 homes that were built here by the mining personnel, people who worked either in the mill or in the mine or in the village as a part of the support group for the mine. They built their own homes. And this is the site that was provided for them to build in, and you can see then something of this particular area. These are some of the homes that they built, and you see they're not cracker boxes. They're substantial homes, and they had to be built substantially in order to withstand the winter snow. So that this gives you some idea of the village, which was known as the Miner's Village or Winston Camp. And this is the way it looked in the fall when the fall colors were on. And then comes winter. And when winter came, it became difficult, obviously, to negotiate with all of the snow that they had to put up with. But you can see the houses on the right and the left were typical of the homes that were built, and often rock walls and even concrete walls in some cases were put up, you see, within the village. This is the way the village looked in the wintertime, and this is the kind of snow they had to deal with. And obviously when you get 6 to 8 feet of snow on the ground, it becomes difficult to find a place to push it aside so that you can keep the roads open. Here's the way it looked. And obviously this is a very difficult kind of thing to deal with. Here is again a snow scene in the village, and these are all homes now that no longer exist. They had to be bulldozed down because the snow crushed all of the roofs. When the mine closed and there was nobody there to take care of the snow and keep it off of the roof. So while it was a beautiful view during the winter, it also had its problems in connection with the snow. The kids loved it. You can see there was sledding here that just wouldn't stop. So the sleds were out, and this was good winter sport for them. But they also had the help in removing snow from their homes. And here you see one of the youngsters up on the snowbank. And the sleds are parked, and the snow has to be taken care of. But take a look at this nice home that was crushed by the snow and now is no longer present. In the winter, in the evening, with the lights on, this was a beautiful setting. And this is the kind of snow that built up, and they kept it off of the roofs, and as long as they did that, these homes were very substantial and very adequate. Well, you can't keep people from having fun. So here you see the ski tow. Now notice the two cables here, and they simply grabbed onto the cable and rode up the mountainside, and then when they got to the top, then they had a run down the into the valley, and when they got to the bottom, they were at home. So you didn't have to go to Vail, Colorado, or someplace to have good skiing. And they rigged up their own lift, and this is the way it looked. When you got to the top of the ski lift, you can see Mount Bonanza in the background, and from here they have a wonderful ride down into the valley and back to their home, which was right here in the village. And the ski run is just a little beyond where this picture is taken. So you simply get off your skis and go back home. And that was a wonderful winter recreation for these miners. This is the old footbridge that led across Railroad Creek during the time the mine was in operation. Notice that it has a cover over it and is similar to the footbridge we have today, but actually this bridge had to be removed because it became unsafe, and so this is a chance to see what it looked like during the mining days. This is an interesting picture because it shows what had to be done with the automobiles that were up at the village during the summertime. When winter came, they had to take their automobiles down to the area which is where we go down to get on to the boat, to get on Lake Chelan. This was Lucerne, and the cars were parked at Lucerne during the winter, because they could not allow these automobiles to be on the road when the trucks, the ore trucks, were going up and down. They would be in a hazard to the traffic and so on, and the automobiles could not be kept at Holden Village because if you pile 8-10 feet of snow on top of an automobile, it'll crush the roof. And so the cars had to be taken out of the village and down here, stored during the winter. Then in the spring, when the snow melted, the cars could be brought back to Winston Camp or back to the miners' village. Well, why would you want an automobile if you were at Holden as a miner? Well, here I think the answer is evident from the sign on this building. This is Lucerne. And in the village, at Holden proper, there was very strict laws about liquor and things of that kind, and the company monitored that in a very good way. But Lucerne was another store. That was 12 miles down the road, and so people came down here for recreation and whatnot. There were cabins available. The Lady of the Lake ran all year around, so there were recreational opportunities that were available there. Now, in the last slides here, I want to show you what the upper level of the mine looked like as we came in 1962 in the early years of Holden Village. We began to clean up the wreckage up at the upper level of the mine. The building that you see to the left is the engineering building, which we saw in the first slide, where all the snow was. And now in the summertime, we are gradually getting the junk together and making use of the space that's available to us up at the upper level of the mine. And finally, the last picture shows what the tunnel entrance looks like now at the upper level of the mine, the 1,500-foot level. This is the way the tunnel actually looked, the portal. And this was the haulage tunnel. And now it's grown over and, of course, is all blocked up and is not available. We can't get back into it at all. I was back into this tunnel to the end of it in the early 60s. But in the latter part of the 60s, the outer end of the tunnel caved in, and so it has not been entered since that time. And this is the way it looked. Now you can also get an idea here of why we wanted to build a little frame outside of the museum, which would replicate the portal, you see, into the mountain, so that as you come into the museum, you come in through a passageway that is in part similar and replicates the portal that was the mine tunnel in the days when the mine was in operation. Now, this is the end of the slides, and the presentation has been designed to give you some idea of what the conditions were like at the mine during the year-round operation, inside of the mountain, so that you saw some of the machinery and some of the operation that related to that, and also to show you the village, the Winston camp, and the 100 homes that existed in the valley that are no longer there. So this concludes our presentation then of this portion of the mine's history, which relates to the Holden Mine here in Railroad Creek Valley. Thank you very much. I'm Rudy Edmond, and we'll conclude at this point. Thank you.